And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure.
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio. This is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
Good morning, everybody. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're talking about all the great things, the people, the places, the history, the culture, and events that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona such a great, great thing.
That's right. And we have got a great show for you folks today here on this beautiful Sunday morning.
You know, we're gearing up for Centennial. I mean, people... hopefully realize that next year, Valentine's Day of 2012, our great state will be will have been a state for 100 years.
That's crazy.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, and do you know which president was in office when Arizona became a state? Maybe that would be a trivia question.
Well, no, I got a better trivia question. I think a trivia question this week will be...
Or what other state came in with us?
Or how did Arizona get its name?
Because which one?
Yes.
Which one? It's got several names.
No, it's only the one.
Well, it's so Arizona.
There you have it.
Oh, there's our guest.
By the way, folks, that's our guest, Jim Turner, local historian and all-around good guy. But
one name, but several pet names, I guess.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Oh,
yeah.
You're talking about, like, the Sunshine Factory in the old Pueblo.
The Valentine's Day, the Baby State.
Yep. Very good. Very good. Well, folks, this is the Fred and Jeff Show, and thanks for tuning in here on 104.1 The Truth. And if you want to hit listen to some back shows, go to our website, fredandjeff.com. We have great content there. All the shows from our past lives are there.
We have pictures from all of our guests, and actually, it's going to be fun this week because fredandjeff.com right now, you're going to be in for a big treat, and we'll get into that a little bit later.
Well, no, let's get into it now, because the folks should go there. If you're at home and you're listening to the show, if you go to the website, or later on in the week or next month or whenever you go to the website, you're going to have an opportunity to actually see the pictures of the things that we're talking about on the show. Because Jim Turner's got great content, and we're going to be talking a lot today about who Jim is and the book that he's written. But if you go to the website, you're going to see exactly what it is we're talking about. So we've kind of got a multimedia show here today, right, Fred?
Yes, we do. And you're right. It's forever because, you know, once the live show's done, we post the show in a podcast format, and you can go back and listen to it and listen online and then see the pictures as it's going.
That's right. So real quick, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, how you doing, Jim?
Good.
Good. How did Arizona get its name?
Well, it's there was a mining discovery in 1736 in a location about 18 miles southwest of Nogales, and there was a ranch there, and the ranch was owned by a man who was of Basque origin.
Basque.
Northern Spain, you know, the Basque separatists and all of this. They have a separate language. It's not Latin-based. It's not Indo-European. Basque is Basque. It's like Gaelic, you know. There's no comparison.
So it's not one of the Romance languages.
No. They found chunks of silver. They called it bolas y planchas de plata. These are balls and plates of almost pure silver.
Wow.
Up in the mountains above this ranch house, and everybody swarmed in. Within months, there were 400 people there mining this silver. Well, the Spanish officials were suspicious. They thought it might be an illegal smelter up there, because why is all this pure silver, big chunks? They found a chunk of silver that was a ton and a quarter.
Wow.
And they carved a 300-pound slab off of it and took it to Mexico City. And so they brought in the Spanish officials, and that was Juan Bautista de Anza Sr. You know, the junior was the one that left from Tubac and set up the colony in San Francisco. But Sr., Juan Bautista de Anza Sr., had with him a scribe, and they took depositions, you know, where do you think this came from, and so on and so forth, from the miners. They interviewed the Tohono O'odham, and they asked the Tohono O'odham, what do you call this place up in the mountain there? And they said, we don't have a name for it. because nobody goes there. There's Apaches up there, and we don't go there, so we don't have a name for it. So all of these letters about this terrific discovery wound up being written about. They went to Mexico City, they went to Spain, and they were written from this ranch house. So the return address on all of these reports was a ranch with the Basque name Aritz, A-R-I-T-Z, O-N-A, Aritz Ona. And it means in Basque, and still does today, place of the good oak trees.
Place of the good oak trees.
That's right. There were five varieties of oaks. It's about 4,000 feet elevation at the, maybe 3,000 at the ranch house, but then another 1,000 feet up or more up to the mine. You have to go by horseback to get up there. But so this word got out, and they confused the ranch house with the mine, and they said silver was found at Arizona. So the word got out. And then after the gold rush, people started looking at old Spanish documents to find out where the mines were, because everybody went mining crazy. And Charles Poston, considered the father of Arizona, in his own mind anyway, he decided he wanted a separate territory, the southern part of New Mexico and the southern part of Arizona. And so in 1854, they wrote up a petition, and originally they were going to call it Mesilla. And they thought about Gadsonia for the Gadsden Purchase, but then he thought, well, if we put the legendary silver mine, I'm going to get a lot of backers for my mining, because Arizona, oh yeah, we know that's where all that silver came from. So that's how it got from 1736 to 1854, and that's how the territory got its name, and then Arizona got its name.
I bet you didn't know that, did you, friend?
I did not know that.
That's very cool.
I wrote an article, I think it was February of 2010, in Arizona Highways, just a little blurb about that. But a lot of research was done in 1995. There was an article in the Journal of Arizona History. People still think, well, it means arid zone. Well, in the first place,
I've heard
it's
that.
The location of the original, and if you drive into this little farming community, the sign, on the signpost for the name of the community, still Arizona, even though it's in Mexico. The name of the community is Arizona, and there are cottonwood trees there, and there are eight varieties of oak trees there. It's not an arid zone. And if it was Spanish, which it was, it would be Zona Arida, because you put
the noun first.
Right.
And then for a while in the 50s and through the 70s, they thought it was a Tohono-O-Odham word that meant, what they did was they worked backwards. They took the name Arizona and they said, what's the closest Tohono-O-Odham word to that? And they found Alishonok, which is a shallow spring. But Father Kino was in that area from the 1680s on, and he noted every village and every location that was there. He made these wonderful maps, and he never had one for that. And after Don Garate wrote the article for the Journal of Arizona Highways, people wrote to him and said there are about 24 more places called Arizona in Central America and South America, and there are Basques in all of those places. But there are no Tohono-O-Odham in any of those places.
So that's how they made the connection.
Yeah. Well, people say, are there oak trees in all of those places? And I always say, well, if you pay to send me there, I'll let you know.
That's a good gig.
That's a great story.
That would be a nice job.
That's great history. You know, the show today is going to be devoted to Arizona history.
Sure.
And tell us a little bit about your background in Arizona history.
Well, we moved here in 1951. My dad took us to all of the, you know, the historic sites and Indian ruins. But then I started reading biographies when I was in grade school. I took my first class in Tucson history at Pima College in 74. And then I taught, for my student teaching, I taught Arizona history in 1976 out at Canyon del Oro. But then I went and did other stuff. Went back and got a master's degree in 1999, and then I went to work for the Arizona Historical Society.
That's great.
So I taught one semester summer school at the U of A, and then I teach non-credit for Pima College sometimes. Currently, I'm teaching online for Central Arizona College, and I do a lot of non-credit stuff for Central Arizona College as well.
And you've got a connection with the Arizona Historical Society as well.
Well, I retired from there. I was there 8 years, so I do research. If somebody requests research, I'll do that for them.
That's great. Okay, so we got to pay the bills now real quick. And when we come back, we're going to have more with Jim Turner. We're going to talk about more Arizona history.
And pay very close attention to this program, because at some point we're going to ask a question, a trivia question, and the first person who goes to www.fredandjeff.com hits the contact us button and gives us the right answer, you get a dozen roses from Mayfield Florists.
That's right.
So stick around and we'll be right back.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
Are you planning a special event or celebration? Call Arizona Party Rental, the number one party rental company in southern Arizona.
Dave Fitzsimmons, cartoonist here. I figured since you can buy politicians so easily these days, why not rent an entire party? So I contacted Arizona Party Rental, and they said, that's not what we do. Well, guess what I found out? I found out they rent everything you need to throw a party. You know, I'm the kind of guy who likes getting married so often, it's good to know. Planning a party or a special event? Check him out at ArizonaPartyRental.net. Now, every time I get married, I call on Arizona Party Rental. If you're like me and you say I do more often than Larry King, call on Arizona Party Rental. And unlike Uncle Sam, they understand what a tight budget means.
Thanks a lot, David. Hi, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. Do what Fitzsimmons does. Draw your own conclusions. Visit Arizona Party Rental today on Speedway and check us out on Facebook.
When Jeff and I are looking for a good cigar, we head over to Anthony Cigar Emporium.
That's right, Fred. They have a great selection, knowledgeable staff, a comfortable environment. It's the perfect place to buy a cigar for any time.
Three convenient locations, one at Oracle and McGee, one at Crossroads Festival at Swan and Grant, and their new location at Williams Center at Craycroft and Broadway.
Come on over to Anthony Cigar Emporium, get your cigar, and you might even run into Fred and I, and you can tell us why you love Tucson.
Shelby, how does Five Star give back to its customers?
Existing monthly pest control customers who refer a friend to us receive a discount on their next service.
How about your current termite treatment customers?
When a customer's home is treated for termites, they refer a friend who has their home treated, they will receive an additional year of service on their termite contract.
Wow, that could add up to over $1,000 in savings.
Yes, it can. Log on to our website for details on our customer rewards program.
Five Star, the natural choice. 886-0045, 5starTermite.com.
Friends and family coming to visit? Wine and dine them this holiday season with authentic Southwest cuisine and real culture. Give the gift of the real Southwest. TucsonRealDeals.com.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And we're back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're talking Arizona history with friend of the show and local historian Jim Turner. Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Good, good.
Now, before the break, we were talking about all sorts of stuff with Arizona, you know, how Arizona got its name and all that kind of stuff. But we want to remind folks, if they go to www.friendjeff.com, we're going to be this part of the show, we're going to start talking about some things that they're going to be able to see pictures of. And you have this wonderful book called Arizona, and these pictures are all pictures you've taken, and they're in the book. We're going to try this little radio experiment where people can go online, listen to the show, and see the pictures as we're talking about them.
Great. Right. And if folks want to buy your book, they can get it. We'll have a link to buy it on Amazon, or right. They can go to Costco,
right.
Or Barnes & Noble.
Or Tubac.
Or Tubac. Oh, that's right. You're going to be down in Tubac.
I'll be on Tubac.
Later today, right?
Yes. Yeah, 1 o'clock. At the Presidio there, and that's the first Presidio in Arizona.
And let's talk about that. How many Presidios are in Arizona?
Well, you know, I had to dig into it. What is a Presidio?
Yeah, what is a Presidio?
What is a Presidio? Yeah, I usually start with that, and I give a presentation. I am available for presentations, too. I'm trying to get...
Birthdays, bar mitzvahs,
yeah, if you got more than 25 people there, I will come give a talk, because I have a book. And so... That's generally, but I gave a talk to the Sons of the American Revolution in Phoenix last Wednesday, and they wanted to know about the connection between colonial Arizona and the revolution. But I start that talk, I call it the Four Presidios, because a presidio is something that the Romans came up with. They called it a presidium or presidium or something, can't remember exactly how to pronounce it, around 78 AD, they had one of these in Tripoli. And the idea was, you don't want to just put a fort way out on the frontier because it's soldiers only and you need support. So a presidio is more like a wall village. And you've got the families, you've got the merchants. It's a self-contained walled city, if you will. And they started, like I say, in North Africa as early as 78 AD. But then in the Middle Ages, you had walled cities, Siena, Carcassonne, a lot of these in medieval times, you just, everybody lived within the walls. And so when they got to the Spanish frontier up into Arizona, that's pretty much the way. And we had our own enemies that we had to keep out. So in Tubac, after the...
Well, now, wait a second.
Yeah.
We had our own enemies. You're talking about
the Spanish.
Raiding the
yeah.
local the indigenous
Apaches.
People.
The Apaches. Okay.
Yeah, so when,
okay.
when the Spanish started colonizing the New World, they ran into the native folks.
Yes.
Who
and they also...
Happy.
In northern Mexico, they had presidios in the 1730s because of the Chichimec Indians, the Chichimeca. They were... pretty rough, pretty tough, and that was a silver mining area, and so they had to get a toehold there. But just like the Foreign Legion or something else, you throw your soldiers out in front and put them in this, not a garrison, not like Fort Apache, but a self-contained village. And in 1751, there was a revolt. The Pima Indians revolted against the missionaries in southern Arizona. And so they decided, well, we better build a fort. So they built a fort in 1752 at Tubac, a presidio at Tubac. And then in 1775, we had an Irishman who was with the Spanish army, Don Hugo O'Connor. And it's Hugh O'Connor, but he was a chieftain's son in Ireland, which was not a good thing to be in the 1750s because of all the persecution. So many of these Irishmen joined the Spanish or the Portuguese army. They were called the Wild Geese.
Now, obviously, he's a target, but there's a lot of Irish men who joined any military that was fighting against the British.
I've never heard of that. That makes sense.
Yeah, Fred,
though.
I've never heard of that either.
I haven't heard of it.
Heavy, are you?
No.
You're a local story.
The Hibernians love telling that story.
Yes. No, it is the Hibernians. That's the name of the regiment, was the Hibernians.
Yeah.
And maybe so. Maybe it's after
you know,
the fact.
They get a few whiskeys in them, and they're like, they joined so they could kick the butts of the British.
Well, so back to the story.
Yeah, nevertheless, Don Hugo was in charge of doing a survey of all the presidios and realigning them to get a better straight line of forts for protection. And so he moved the presidio at Tubac up to Tucson. And nobody moved in until 1776. But that makes two presidios. And then every year at Tucson's birthday, I do research on this. And I found that there were two others. There's one called Terranate. And Terranate is about 7 miles west of Tombstone. It's on the Santa Cruz River. It's within a few hundred yards of the Santa Cruz River. And it's on BLM land, and there are historic markers there. You have to know where the road is, and then you go out to Patagonia, and then you go east from there, and then north a little bit. There's a parking lot. You have to hike about a mile and a quarter. But you can see the foundations of this Spanish fort. And there are markers that talk about all the soldiers that were killed by Apaches there.
No kidding.
Yep. It's
how old are the markers?
Well, the markers were put by BLM, don't know, about 5-10 years ago.
The Bureau of Land Management.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And then they have some very nice aluminum tablets that show that give a sketch of what the fort looked like, what the different buildings look like, and they give a history of it. And so they're anodized aluminum. They'll be there forever.
Oh, that's great. And then now there's a fourth one,
and that was out by Douglas, and it was right on the border, and it was called San Bernardino. And it was built by the Spaniards as a presidio. Later it became a land grant, a cattle ranch. But when Mexico could not ally with the Apaches anymore, they had treaties with the Apaches for a while, and then they ran out of the money. then those ranchers retreated back into Mexico, and the Mormon battalion came through in 1846, and they stopped at the ruins of the San Bernardino Presidio. Later, it became the John Slaughter Ranch. And now it's...
Well, who's John Slaughter?
Texas John Slaughter. He was the sheriff of Cochise County. He was the one that really did the lawman work after the Earps and really took care of. But he had a huge cattle ranch that went... it was a TV show before your time. In the 1950s, there was a TV show about Texas John Slaughter.
Oh, really?
So you have to do Wikipedia. I can't give you that. Can't give you the whole history.
Well,
here.
That's okay. That's
yep.
Cool. It's cool how it all ties together.
It does.
It's,
yep.
Because I've never heard of San Bernardino. I mean,
no,
I've never heard of that.
Neither had I.
Presidio.
That took me a while. That took me a while to dig that one up.
So then what was the Revolutionary connection?
Oh, the Revolutionary connection. The soldiers moved into Tucson around 1776. We don't know exactly what date because the commandant was illiterate. But the king issued a request, a royal request, which is kind of like a seconded motion, you know, a very strong request that the soldiers at the presidios, and there were 22 presidios from the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of California, this string of forts. In Texas, they were fighting, defending against Comanches, and then, of course, in New Mexico and Arizona, Apaches. But the king requested that every soldier give donate two pesos to the American Revolution. Because the old Arab saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and that's what Fred was talking about. Spain was willing to support the United States because they had a common enemy, England. And so the records are all there on the donations, and it's estimated that Tucson soldiers donated about the equivalent of about $40,000 to the American Revolution.
And that's $40,000 in today's money?
Today's money.
Wow, that's amazing.
And that money, according to the records, went to pay for gunboats on the Mississippi River. Because, you know, Spain had Mississippi at that time. Then it goes to Napoleon, and then the Louisiana Purchase. But at that time, Spain owned that area, or at least they were in control of the Mississippi River. So soldiers from the Presidio of Tucson donated money for the American Revolution. And in the past years, when we opened that Presidio reconstruction downtown, you know, by the Holzclaw YMCA,
right.
The Sons of the American Revolution were there, and descendants from the Presidio were there. And in California and in Arizona, they are now allowed to be members of the Sons of the American Revolution because they were allies.
Oh, that's very cool.
That is very
nice. That's very cool.
Yep.
All right.
Now, the what we just talked about is the four Presidios. Now, which of the Presidios are pictured in your book? Are all four of them?
Well, I've got a sketch of Tubac. I've got pictures of the recreation at Tucson. And I've got the foundations, the ruins of the foundations at Terranate. I didn't get over to San Bernardino.
Nice.
And I don't know that there's anything actually left at San Bernardino. There is a great museum there, but it's a ranch museum.
That's great.
We got to pay the bills, say thank you to our sponsors, folks. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes to continue our conversation with Jim Turner.
the Senate passed yesterday, says House Speaker John Boehner, meaning he and fellow House Republicans. He says it only extends unemployment benefits and a payroll tax cut for 2 months when it should do so for a year. Boehner says senators will have to come back and negotiate, and that could take up some holiday time. Republican presidential hopeful Newt Gingrich says if he were president, he would consider dispatching U.S. Marshals to force judges to appear before Congress to explain controversial decisions.
The judges have been much too aggressive. They've imposed a secularism. Now they're reaching into national security in ways that are a threat to the safety of the country.
Gingrich in Atlanta. Joyful reunions today in places like Fort Hood, Texas, as the last U.S. troops to leave Iraq arrive home for Christmas. It is the third day of a military court hearing into whether an Army private should be court-martialed for passing secrets to the WikiLeaks website. The hearing going on, Fort Meade, Maryland. I'm Chuck Sievertson.
Another system set to move through southern Arizona will bring rain and snow. KGUN meteorologist Aaron Brackett. As we go through the day today, the clouds stick around. A 90% chance of showers here in the valley. Could be up to a foot of snow above 6,500 feet. Our temperature 59 here in Tucson. Down to 42 tonight. And this system will be out of here fairly quickly. For your Monday, we'll see morning clouds, maybe a sprinkle remaining. But then sunshine back in the afternoon. For 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM, I'm KGUN meteorologist Aaron Brackett.
At Barker Morrissey Contracting, our goal is to develop lasting relationships with each one of our clients. We measure our success on achieving that in the end. We offer the best possible combination of experience, integrity, and commitment available in Arizona. The foundation of our organization is a commitment to meet our clients' needs from pre-construction services through project build and move-in. We have experienced, cohesive project managers who thoroughly analyze each project prior to construction. We do this to provide value engineering at the front end of the project while reducing time-consuming change orders during construction. We are confident that our collaboration with you will result in a successful project that will exceed your expectations. Barker Morrissey Contracting. Straightforward, honest, and reliable. Call us at 323-3831 to set up an appointment. That's 323-3831.
Do you suffer from irrigation leaks, a broken sprinkler, leaky valves, or you just can't find the problem? At H&S Garden, we provide high-quality, reliable service at reasonable prices. Our repair technician has over 25 years of experience. And if you hate pulling weeds, raking mesquite beans, or trimming those thorny bushes, just leave the dirty work to us. We're licensed contractors with 30 years of experience in landscape management. Our crews are professional and take pride in their work. We'll meet you on-site to establish a program that works for you. Call today at 293-6488 or visit us at hsgarden.com. H&S Garden, a family-owned and operated Tucson small business.
What's a monkey burger?
A simple, well-made burger cooked to your choice.
Why monkey burger?
We called it that because come see our art on the walls. It tells a story. Monkey burger, where it's impossible to be a food snob, even if they do serve wine, beer, as well as Tucson's best burger. 514-9797.
Just drive right past Olive Garden on Broadway in Craycroft and park in front of Monkey Burger.
Power Women Investing, an award-winning comprehensive financial services firm, offers customized programs designed to help grow and conserve your wealth. We encourage you to explore our website at powerwomeninvesting.com and learn more about the services we provide. If you would like to make an appointment, call us at 571-9053. That's 571-9053.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And we're back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hey, everybody.
And we've been talking to friend of the show and local historian Jim Turner about Arizona and all the fun stuff going on in the state over the millennia. And
a little longer than that.
Well, millennia. What's plural?
Remember, because at the beginning of the show, we talked about how Arizona got its name.
Yeah, millennia is 1,000 years.
Yeah, and two millennia. It's one millennium, two millennia. So,
two millennia.
Yeah, come on,
so
Fred.
You had it correctly.
Oh,
you
good.
Had it correct.
So, see, Jeff is always sad when I'm right.
No, not so much that I'm sad. It's just that I'm kind of surprised.
Anyways, welcome back to the big show.
Hey,
we invite you to go to friendjeff.com. You're actually going to be in for a big treat because some of the stuff that we're talking about today on the show, you're going to be able to see the pictures that we're talking about. In the last segment, we talked about some the four forts in Arizona, Presidios in Arizona.
Right.
You're going to see some of those pictures. We're going to be talking a lot about stuff that we'll have pictures of. And also, if you pay very close attention to this, we'll have a trivia question at the end of the show. First person to go to friendjeff.com, click on the contact us button, and send us the right answer, you get a dozen roses from Mayfield Florists.
So, Jim.
Yes.
We were just talking before the break. We were talking about the Presidios.
Right.
The four Presidios in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that the Presidios were so important was because of all the Apache raids.
Right. Yeah.
And you've got a ton of Apache pictures in your book.
That's true. Not from the 1790s, but from the Apache Wars, the 1870s, 1880s. I do have quite a few pictures from there. But in 1797, 1796, in there somewhere, you know, I haven't seen my notes for a while, but there was a policy put out, a peace policy put out by the viceroy, Galvez. And Galvez's peace policy said, we need to ally with the Apaches whenever possible. And the way to do this is offer them free beef, free guns, and blankets if they will move to live outside our presidio right there in an encampment, a reservation, so to speak. So they did that. Now,
why would they? So they would feed them.
Yes.
They would clothe them.
Right.
And they would give them
blankets.
Firearms.
Yes.
And say, come on and move next door.
Specifically, the policy said bad guns.
Ah.
And so they would be dependent on gunsmiths. But the idea was better have the enemy there where you can take care of them. And it worked. It actually worked for several decades. From 1797 until the 1830s, we had an encampment about where the Dunbar School, is it Davis Elementary?
Well, Dunbar's over near Speedway in Maine, that area.
Yeah, that's the one. That's where the Manzo Apaches, M-A-N-S-O, Manzo, and these are the helper or the friendly Apaches. And it's estimated that more than 1,000 Apaches camp there, live there, right next to. And they were outfitted with horses and with military gear, and they were the auxiliary for the Spanish soldiers.
Just scouts?
No, they actually, the Apaches that were still raiding at one point, and there's Spanish reports on all of this stuff, that the Apaches would come in and raid the horse herd. They didn't necessarily always want to attack the fort. They just want to get the horses. So they would raid the horse herd and take off for the south. And in one particular expedition, the renegades or the Apaches raided the horse herd, started towards Madera Canyon. Spanish soldiers went with the Manzo Apaches, chased after them, caught up with them, got the horses back, and then the Spaniards gave horses to the Manzo Apaches as payment.
Oh, thank you.
For serving as the auxiliary.
Wow.
So these were Apache allies. And this worked for about 30 years.
And then what happened?
Well, Mexico won its independence in 1821, and they could no longer afford to supply the beef and the guns and the blankets. They didn't have the monetary backup that the Spanish royalty had. I mean, this was Mexico on its own, and they just couldn't afford to support it anymore. Another two interesting policy points in the policy, they mentioned to the officials, try to get them hooked on gambling and drinking.
Oh, wow.
Because that would destroy their culture and make them a much easier to control.
And that policy has had horrible ramifications till today.
And the irony is, now they have casinos.
Wow.
And here's the Spaniards say, let's get them hooked on gambling. And then now they're in charge of it, and they're dealing with other people who are hooked on gambling.
Amazing. It is what you can
take from history. 1,000 Indians. I don't know how many of them actually, you know, that worked, but it was in the policy. I don't know whether it actually was successful or not. But
amazing.
Putting them next to the Spanish community probably didn't help much either as far as availability of alcohol. They had their own Tizwin or Tulipi, which is kind of a corn beer. But when they started bringing in brandy, that made for a much larger addiction problem. The Spaniards.
Unbelievable. The nation, building hundreds of years ago, what happens. So
now on a brighter note, you have a beautiful book.
Yes, thanks.
And it's full of pictures of those of the Apache and the Spaniards and and all sorts of great things in Arizona. Now, I mean, it's a nice coffee table size book that people should be going out in droves to be purchasing for Christmas gifts.
Well, apparently they have.
Apparently,
sold a ton of these guys.
Yeah.
When was it first available to the public?
October 1st.
And you've sold.
Well,
it's a second printing already, right?
Yeah, it's going into a second printing. That will show up in February, but the publisher told me today that they're very short on them at the warehouse. So
get them while you can.
They've moved. They're moving them pretty well.
So if you – well, you can get them in Tubac today, this afternoon.
Yes.
Jim will be there. He'll autograph it for you, and you can get it at Costco or Amazon.com, I imagine.
Barnes & Noble.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great.
Yep.
But let's talk about some. I mean, this is truly a beautiful book, and let's talk about some of the pictures in there. And most of these pictures were taken by you, and I know that you had a friend help you.
Yeah. What are your top 10 favorite pictures?
Actually,
in the book?
About 200 of the photos were taken by me because the publisher on my contract said I had to supply 500 photographs.
Wow.
Photographs aren't cheap, so I took 4 major trips around the state in 2 years and a lot of short hops out to this event or that event, and so I took pictures at various places. But I had been a support historian for small museums all over the state when I worked for the Arizona Historical Society. So I knew where the good archives in, say, Globe and Kingman and Thatcher. So pictures from those archives are in the book, but also pictures of their exhibits, their museums. For instance, I'm looking here at a soldier, a mannequin dressed in the uniform of the Mexican-American War. And that's kind of a rare uniform. It doesn't look like the Civil War uniform. They have white pants and a light blue jacket. And this is a mannequin that's in the Arizona Military Museum. It's on Fort McDowell. You have to go to the, you know, to the sentry gate and tell them you want to go see the museum. So that's pictures of statues. And
let me ask you a question. How you're with you worked for the Arizona Historical Society for years and years and years.
Right, yeah.
Is there a catalog of all this history throughout the state that's kept at the Arizona Historical Society? Or are these trips that you've taken and made these little discoveries along the way?
Well, it's some of each. I did buy 50 images from the Arizona Historical Society, and they probably have more than 500,000 images there. But as far as knowing what's in each museum, that's something that I sort of collected in my head. And I knew, for instance, I've got a picture in this book of Rawhide Apache playing cards. And these are very rare. They went at a world auction. A full set of Apache playing cards went for $600,000.
When were they made?
Well, they were made in the 1860s, probably 1860s or 1870s. Spaniards, they had their own gambling games, but the Spaniards came in and they taught them, you know, faro or whatever the games were that the Spaniards played. So these are playing cards that look like ours, except they have 4 arrowheads or 2 spears or 4 dots, whatever their symbols for the 4 suits were. And then they're about 3 inches by 5 inches, and they're heavy rawhide. I mean, so they're like heavy cardboard.
So you, through your travels throughout Arizona, you found these little gems.
Right, yes.
And so that's, I mean, again, that's a great reason for local folks, people in Tucson, to get out into the rural communities in the state and discover these treasures.
Every one of the photos has a caption on it saying which museum I got it from.
Oh, that's fabulous.
So it's really a guidebook. And it also kind of dictated where I was what I was going to write about. Because I go to Globe, and all the pictures are about mining. So I know that that's a mining community. I went to Kingman. All the pictures in Kingman are about mining. So then I know that most of Arizona history is about mining. You go to Wilcox, it's all about ranching. You go to Holbrook, it's about ranching. You go to Duncan and Thatcher, it's about cotton farming. So really, I got the pictures first. I already knew what the major parts of Arizona were, but the pictures really, if you go to a town and you find out, you know, what's your major industry, the pictures tell the story.
Now, is there anywhere that you can go in Arizona to discover more ghost town kind of history? Mm. Because I know I've got a lot of friends that live outside of Arizona that hear nothing about ghost towns. Oh, you've got so many ghost towns in Arizona.
All the old silver cities.
All the old mines, all the old mining towns. Yeah. I mean, is that something that you have great knowledge about, or can direct people to?
No, I just occasionally I'll type in a ghost town, and I'll find there's a website that's pretty good for that. I don't remember the name of it, but it's just not part of what I do. A lot of the ghost towns are they're owned, privately owned, because there still could be some minerals there. So a mining company owns it or what have you. I wrote an article once about Christmas, Arizona. There is a town called Christmas. And in the 1920s and 30s, people liked to send their mail there at Christmas time so it could be postmarked from Christmas, Arizona.
Oh, that's great.
Yep. There is also a Santa Claus, Arizona, that's up by Kingman, north of Kingman, I believe. And there's an article in the Journal of Arizona History about Santa Claus, and it was basically, they were trying to start kind of a retirement community there. It really never got off the ground. And but they had a pie shop, a cafe that was famous for homemade pies. And evidently the woman who was in charge of the subdivision and the cafe weighed 300 pounds or something. So must have made pretty good pies.
Yeah. Or she ate all the profits.
Right, right.
Well, you know, we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Christmas and the history of Arizona.
Great.
So
Stick around.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
Casa de la Luz is Spanish for House of Light. That's what one needs when facing a terminal illness. A House of Light to provide comfort, support, and experienced hospice care during the end-of-life journey. The mission of Casa de la Luz is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Founded in 1998 by Lynette Jaramillo and Agnes Poor, Casa de la Luz Hospice has become a leading provider of superior hospice care throughout southern Arizona. Whether it is in the hospital, at home, an assisted center, or a nursing home, the caring staff at Casa de la Luz will reach far beyond the usual and customary hospice service. Every service provided is a reflection of our commitment to our community. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
I'm Jim Ronstadt. Over 100 years ago, my grandfather established Ronstadt Hardware in the heart of the Old Pueblo. The Ronstadts were a pioneer family during the growth of a fledgling city, and his store was founded on hard work, craftsmanship, and good service.
This is Jeff Ronstadt, and I am proud to carry on the family tradition with my dad at Ronstadt Insurance. In these trying economic times, you may have many questions about your health care and what's on the horizon. You may be asking questions like, how do I enroll in a Medicare plan and how much will it cost? Are my prescription drugs covered? And what will my out-of-pocket cost be?
If you are confused about Medicare, call us at 721-4848 and we will help you make a confident decision about your Medicare benefits. We are insurance agents licensed by the state of Arizona and we would be honored to assist you.
That's Ronstadt Insurance. Call us at 721-4848. We are pioneers in good service.
experience the real Southwest this holiday season. Ride into the holidays, packing the finest Tucson has to offer. Visit TucsonRealDeals.com for fabulous hotel rates, dining specials, and more. TucsonRealDeals.com.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And we're back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hello, everybody out there. Thanks for tuning in.
And in studio with us is a local historian, friend of the show, Jim Turner. Hey, Jim, we've been talking the city of Christmas, the city of Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah.
And we have some Christmas history in the great state of Arizona.
Absolutely. When I got started with oral histories, I was working at the U of A for the Wildcat, designing ads, but I was kind of an amateur historian. And I met Dion Bretthart, who was the editor of Lo Que Pasa at the time, the staff and faculty newspaper at the U of A. And I told her I wanted to do an article about Ash Alley, you know, where the poets and artists were in the 1950s downtown. And she said, well, you should talk to my mother. And her mother was India Smalley Moore. India Smalley Moore. And India was born in Tucson in 1902. And so I wound up house-sitting and eventually talking to India every Thursday afternoon for about 3 months. And then a couple of years later, I went back and did the same thing. And I wound up with 60 hours of oral history tapes of everything she knew about Tucson or that she could remember about Tucson. And her father, George Smalley, came to Arizona in about 1896 from Minnesota because he had pneumonia, he had health problems. And so Smalley was a newspaper man. His father had been a newspaper man, and he had interviewed outlaws in Minnesota, the great James Gang
don't look at me. I'm not the
George came to Arizona, got a job as a newspaper man, and he wrote articles for newspapers back east about the mining prospects because people wanted to invest in the mines in Arizona in the 1890s, and they didn't know if they were getting a true mine or a fake mining stock. You know, that's
which had to be very prevalent.
Big swindles, absolutely big swindles. So George went around to the mines and looked inside and looked at the equipment, and he wrote articles for St. Louis newspapers and Los Angeles newspapers and talked about whether these were good mines or not. He also went into Mexico. But 1890s in Arizona, that's pretty rough country. And so I think it's 1898. He was in Big Bug, Arizona.
Big Bug?
Big Bug.
Where
absolutely
is Big Bug, Arizona?
Big Bug is, I believe it's southeast of Prescott. And there was a creek there called Big Bug Creek, and we assume that it was probably these water striders, you know, that were on the creek, and they said, well, there's a lot of big bugs here, so they called it Big Bug. And but there was gold. There was quite a bit of gold there, and starting in maybe even the 1860s, they found gold. And, of course, they found gold in the Prescott area as well, but this is a mountainous region. And so in 1898, George is there reporting for the Phoenix Republican. It had an N on it back then. And about the mining prospects in Big Bug. Well, he's there just a day or two before Christmas. And so this is a mining camp, probably 200, 300 people there, and their families and their kids. And there's a school teacher there. And so they're in the mountains, just about nowhere, and, you know, up by Prescott, so there'd be snow this time of year. And George wrote just a delightful article about Christmas in Big Bug and how Christmas had come early because the teacher was going back to Phoenix, I believe, for spend her time with relatives. And so they decided they'd have the Christmas celebration a couple of days early. But George wrote a wonderful article for the newspaper and very glowing about this school teacher. And one thinks maybe he was kind of trying to get her over on his side or something. You know, I'll make you famous. I'll put you in the newspaper. But the whole community came together, trudged through the snow. They had a community Christmas tree, and of course they had poems were recited and songs were sung. And so this was Christmas at Big Bug, and he liked to write sort of like Bret Hart. Bret Hart wrote stories about mining camps. And Bret Hart wrote stories about mining camps because Mark Twain wrote stories about mining camps. Starting in the 1870s, we had the Jumping Frog of Calaveras County.
Wonderful short story.
Great short story. So there was a real rash of writers at that time, journalists that were trying to write along that style with the frontier character. And so that's George's story about Big Bug.
Now, can people today find that story somewhere and read it?
They can find it on my website, as a matter of fact.
There you go.
Your website
is jimturnerhistorian.org.
That's correct. jimturnerhistorian.org. And I have uploaded quite a few stories that I've written. And if that one's not on there, it will be by this afternoon, Sunday afternoon.
When you get back from Tubac.
When I get back from Tubac, it'll be on there, or maybe even before that. Maybe I'll do it. Anyway, I'll get it done. And so you'll have Christmas at Big Bug.
That's
great.
You'll
be able to read it.
That's very great.
Now, we're inviting people to go to fredandjeff.com to see some of the pictures that go with the stories Jim's been talking about.
Right.
And to take a look at this book. It's just a beautiful book. It's called Arizona. I think it has a subtitle.
A Celebration of the Grand Canyon State.
And, you know, this is, we're moving into just weeks away from our centennial year as a state, as part of the United States.
Right, right.
And one of the things we talked about earlier in the show was how Arizona actually got its name, the territory, and then eventually the state. So every week, our good friends Don Coleman and over at Mayfield Florist gives us a dozen roses to give away to one of our lucky listeners. So the first person to go to fredandjeff.com, click on the Contact Us button, and send in the answer to this question will get a dozen roses from Mayfield Florist. And the question this week is, what does Arizona translate to in the Basque language that it came from?
Right.
So, again, the question is, what does Arizona translate into from the Basque? And the first person who goes to friendjeff.com, clicks on the Contact Us button, and sends us an email, will get a dozen free roses from Mayfield Florist.
And they'll be beautiful.
And they are gorgeous.
So, Jim, thanks a bunch for coming on the show. We really, really appreciate it. Your book is beautiful.
Thank you.
And the one thing I also want to mention, one other thing about your website, jimturnerhistorian.org, is it's got 50 topics that if folks want you to come and speak to their groups,
right,
there are 50 topics that they can choose from to have you speak. And you speak for, you know, you can speak for 20 minutes or an hour.
Yeah, usually they don't want more than an hour, but 45 minutes is about average.
Perfect.
And if they have a special topic, if you give me a couple of months, I can probably work something up.
Perfect. And you're getting in your car and you're zipping up to Tubac, or zipping down to Tubac
now. That's right.
So, yeah. Folks, if you want to see Jim in person, you'll have some books, get a signature, head on down to Tubac this afternoon. You'll be there at 1 o'clock.
Right.
All right, folks.
Now, next week, we have a special treat for you guys. We're going to have a bunch of people coming in, kids, mariachi bands,
our big Christmas show.
They'll be singing.
Yeah,
all
so
right.
Tune in tomorrow, or tune in next Sunday at 11 a.m. to hear the big Christmas show. And, folks, have a great week.